I'd known for a while that I would have some time off in between finishing up work and returning to uni to pick up my studies again, and wanted to do something with that time, something that I thought was valuable and could help out other people. I'd been looking around at a whole lot of different things that I could do, whether it be here at Melbourne or travelling overseas. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. I got in touch with a volunteer network called Global Volunteer Network, and they have a whole lot of programs that they can link people into. The program in Ghana had some places available, so really the program chose me. I didn't choose the program, but it worked out fantastic. At the program in Ghana, there was a capacity of 16 people working from as international volunteers. So some people stay for 2 months, 3 months, so there's a lot of crossover, which works really well because it means that the volunteers that have been there before can sort of give you the heads up on different things, can tell you what's what, and tell you who to look out for and that sort of thing.
What sort of preparation was needed before you went?
Probably a lot more preparation than I actually did. I decided 3 weeks before my plane took off that I was going, so I crammed a lot of preparation into those 3 weeks. You need some background knowledge on the country that you're going to, so I did a bit of reading on Ghana and also Liberia because I was working in a Liberia camp. I really feel that I went to Little Liberia rather than Ghana, trying to understand some of the history behind that, just so that when people on camp are talking to you, you can understand where they've come from.
And Liberia, what could you tell us about Liberia before you actually landed? How much did you know about the conflicts there?
Yeah, I knew nothing. Pretty much I knew that there was civil war, and I think, you know, I'd created my own image in my head of what that meant, but I've learnt so much from 1 month living on the camp, and I've come back with a desire to learn more about Liberia and the history. Like, I went over thinking that, you know, Charles Taylor or some of the leaders of the rebels groups were people that we should be hating and, you know, they should be going to jail, that sort of thing. But on camp, you realise that so many of the people there actually admire these leaders because they brought them out of the past problems. It's a world of turmoil and something that's so foreign to us, especially living in Australia, where we've got peace 24/7.
And first landing at the camp, describe the camp situation and how many people were there.
The camp, when you think of a refugee camp, I was thinking, you know, tents and, you know, real ad hoc living. And I suppose it is in a way, but it's more of a mini settlement. Come back to me. 14th of May 2006. Sis Naomi, please come. I need to speak with you. A face peering in through the window demands. And my heart drops. What do they want? And how am I going to respond? I have so much and they have so little. How can I not give? And what they ask for is so relatively small. 30 cents for food for the family. $12 for a term's worth of school fees. $5 for malaria medication. But how can I fairly distribute what I have? And is it fair that those who live close to our house and therefore know us well, and those that have the guts to ask us, are the ones who get our help? I'm used to beggars in Melbourne asking for money and just assuming that it'll be for drugs. But here, they actually use the money for what they ask for. And usually it's for food or medication. It just breaks my heart. There's 42,000 people on camp. It's huge. I don't think in my whole month I actually saw all of camp. People are living in cement brick houses, so it's basic living, but it's adequate. I don't think I was struck at first by the poverty and the desperate situation because people seem to have enough to live on. There's actually a real, almost festival feel at camp because people are living in such a close community with each other. Everyone's friends with their neighbours or you know, you sit outside your house all the time because it's too hot in the house, so you get to know the people living around you. And there's a big marketplace at the top of camp where people are constantly playing music and just people just hang out. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to do than just hang out with each other. So there's a real community feel. In some ways it's positive, in some ways perhaps a bit negative because, you know, there's not the production and going out to work and that sort of thing that perhaps we value in our society. May 23rd, 2006. We gather around the water cooler in the office. But now I know the origin of this ritual. As we were digging some new drains around the well this morning, the women gather around to draw water. Their chatter and laughter permeates the air. They carry away full buckets of water, balancing them with ease atop of their heads. A little girl, barely at walking age, wants to be a part. Her mother places a tiny bowl of water on her head and she totters along. Water splashes out the sides, but in no time she will balance perfectly. There's no paved roads or anything, so when I arrived at camp, I decided that I would be dirty and hot and smelly for a month and I'd get clean when I come home. So it was very different in that respect. But you get used to, you know, stepping over potholes and mud piles that you don't quite know what's in there, and walking around the chickens. I think there's a few chickens that I stood on, stray dogs just roaming around, kids just playing everywhere, and everyone wants to stop and talk to you and say hello and that sort of thing. 25th of May 2006. I'd never really thought about what it was like to be a part of the minority. In fact, I don't think I've ever really thought about what it's like to be part of the majority in society. When I first arrived here, my eyes sought out white people. I could spot them a mile off. I never understood that race affiliation until now, and I could feel everyone looking at me because I was different. Now, I almost forget that I am not black. I even stare when I see other white people. So many people know my name, and I feel terrible because I can't even remember them. Last night, I was walking to the other guest house, and my name was called out from everywhere. It was like hearing voices, echoes of Naomi, coming from the darkness.
Did you feel that everyone was content where they were and wanting to maybe stay and settle, maybe not in the camp, but there in Ghana? Or were they eager to get home, and were they up on the news what was happening back home in Liberia?
Yeah, people do know what's going on in Liberia. It's funny how there is such a lack of perhaps news media as we know it, but everyone knows what's going on in their home country and in Ghana as well. As for settling on camp, there's a real mixed feel. A lot of people don't want to head back to Liberia just because they don't believe that it's safe yet. There's a real push from UNHCR to return home. They've just had elections in October last year, and so there's hopes that Liberia is now going to rebuild and be a safer country. But a lot of the refugees fear that returning home will be the same as when people returned home after the elections in 97, and it was just as bad. There was more killing, and people actually returned back to camp after that. So there's a lot of fear about returning back to Liberia, although a lot of people do want to return home. They're just waiting for that time that they can go home.
And the Ghanaians, are they welcoming the Liberians?
There's, once again, a mixed feeling about that. They tend to be quite separated. A lot of people, in Accra, the capital city, when I said I was working at the refugee camp, would just sort of, and not mention anything more. The Ghanaians don't perhaps like the Liberians as much, because in some ways life on camp is a lot better than life in outer Ghana. People do have, in some ways, better living conditions on the camp than if they were just living on the streets in Ghana. It is a bit of a tense relationship.
How about the actual work that you did there? What sort of stuff did you do?
I was working with a local NGO on camp called Children Better Way. What I really loved about going there was the fact that it wasn't just the white people going in and fixing a problem. It was a local organisation, and we were going in there just to help out. CBW has a few different programs that they run. They run some schools for the poorer families on camp. The schools that CBW runs have the lowest school fees on camp. They also run a water and sanitation program, which is what I mainly worked on. And we helped dig a well while I was there, which was a really interesting process to be a part of. And just to see people digging a well without any of the tools that we consider necessary for that sort of thing. I mean, their saw couldn't even cut through, you know, a 4x2 plank of wood, and they didn't have the tools to cut a piece of sheet metal. They actually perforated the metal with a nail and hammer and then ripped it with their hands. It was very interesting to be a part of. We also cleaned out the drains every second day, which was a smelly job and dirty job. We would get, you know, it was all open drain system where people would just dump their rubbish, their water from their houses, and even just go to the toilet in the drains while you were cleaning them. But it was good as well, because we were doing some education around that. We'd sit down with people on the camp and talk about why you can't just drop your rubbish wherever and why it's important to put your rubbish in the bins that are provided and that sort of thing. They also had a HIV and AIDS outreach program and care and support program, where people went around just to break down at some of the negative images that surround HIV and AIDS. You know, it's a serious problem on the camp and in Africa in general, so working to support the people that are in that situation, but also educate people about how to prevent it and how to deal with people that you know have it. We'd have a rec program where we'd take kids out to the Fee every Tuesday and Thursday, which was the field. The Fee was pretty much just a clearing in the Gulf where all the people from camp dumped their rubbish, they'd cleared a spot, and that was the soccer field. That was often some of the funnest time because that was when the kids got to play and to be kids. They didn't have to worry about all the things that come with being a refugee. They could just be kids. We were helping to build a library at the school. There was a microloan program. There's just a whole lot of things going on that you could be a part of, both helping to alleviate immediate problems and helping with long-term problems as well.
Can you see these people really pulling themselves up out of this situation and some real good coming of the work that CBW are doing?
Yeah, there's different people deal with things in different ways. You would walk past people that would just sit around all day and seem to do nothing to help get themselves out of the problems. You know, they would just come and ask us for money and that would be how they would solve their problems, and that was quite disheartening a lot of the time. But then you would walk past people that had set up a business, you know, a sewing business, and were getting a whole lot of business coming in and generating enough money to buy another sewing machine, and that was really exciting to watch these people, you know, realizing that yes, they're in a bad situation, but deciding to do something about it. You'd walk past people just reading, and that would really excite me because it's like, yes, you're trying to learn more and get ahead in life, and that was exciting. June 7th, 2006. So it is only now that I have returned home that I realise how much I love life in Little Liberia. Adjusting back to normal life is seemingly more of a challenge than it was to adjust to African life. I spent one night on my way home in a hotel in Kuala Lumpur. Eating the buffet breakfast, I burst into tears. There is more food for this one meal than most of my African friends would have seen in their lifetime. Where is the fairness in that? The African journey has come to an end, or is this just the beginning?
And for yourself, you say in your journals, the African journey has come to an end, or is this just the beginning? What are you going to do next, Naomi?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that one out, whether it be return to Africa or to work from here to help, I don't know, just broaden people's perspective and open people's eyes to a different lifestyle. The fact that the way we live here isn't the only way, and that there's people out there that need our help. So yeah, I'm not sure what that continuation of the journey is, but I know that 1 month isn't enough.